I sold my car in Carvana last night.
Well, that's cool.
No, you don't understand. It went perfectly. Real offer, down to the penny. They're picking it up tomorrow. Nothing went wrong.
So, what's the problem?
That is the problem. Nothing in my life goes as smoothly. I'm waiting for the catch.
Maybe there's no catch.
That's exactly what a catch would want me to think.
Wow, you need to relax.
I need to knock on wood. Do we have wood? Is this table wood?
I think it's laminate.
Okay, yeah, that's good. That's close enough.
Car selling without a catch. Sell your car today on Carvana. Pickup fees may apply.
These ants have been trained to design and build an igloo using tiny blocks of ice. Once the igloo is complete, the ants take a well-deserved rest. We'll come back to the ants later. In the meantime, thanks, ants. Thanks.
This is the Extra Hot Great Podcast, episode 22, for the week of February 24th, 2014. I am Shriek Lonkin, David T. Cole, and I'm here with Crowded Train, Sarah D. Bunting.
P.U.
Disgusted Gate Agent, Tara Ariano.
Do I look like I care that you're in a race?
And Friendly Greeter, John Ramos.
Welcome to Rand McNally.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Extra Hot Great. We welcome back for the second time in 3 weeks, Mr. John Ramos. Welcome, John.
Thank you. I never left, actually. I was in the closet the whole time.
This is awkward.
Today, we're going to be talking, as our lead topic, some amazing race all-stars, and John covers that for previously.tv, so we wanted to have an expert opinion back on the podcast. Mm-hmm. Before we get into that, I just have a little bit of policy change to discuss with everybody. It's minor. By suggestion on the comments, I believe, a spoiler end tag from when we're doing sort of impromptu short dips into spoiler territory. So if we have a spoiler from now on, and it's for the whole segment, you'll hear the regular spoiler warning. If we're just doing something and we suddenly realize we're in spoiler territory for a few minutes, we're going to do this. This will start us off. Spoilers aho, fun ahoy. And then we'll discuss about how Darth Vader is Yoda's aunt or whatever. And then when we're done, in case
there's a spoiler,
in case you're skipping over things with your media player, scrub until you start hearing this music towards the end. And that should give you enough time to get back to normal speed. And we'll be back into non-spoiler territory. So that's how it's going to work from now on. And I
hope
that
will probably not be used in this episode at all.
Probably not. And let's get to it, shall we?
Yes. John, you're here to talk about The Amazing Race. Defend your show. Just kidding.
24.
I know. It's amazing.
Well, my expert opinion may not be so expert, given that, as anyone who reads my coverage from last season knows, that I didn't watch from, like, I don't know, the preteen to early teen seasons until last season. So, literally, Leo and Jamal were the only team that I knew before. I did a little research. Obviously, there's the Big Brother team.
Oh, you had already bailed before Luke and Margie?
I had bailed before Luke and Margie.
Wow, because even we watched that season.
I remember.
Well, and you've been on it, like, 15 times. It's
kind of
amazing that you missed a Luke and Margie season.
Well, I think there have been three. There are three teams that were on, three and a half teams, I guess, that were on three times before. Some of them were on season 18, which I guess was the, I forget what Smurfy name they called it, but it was some kind of, you know, back, it was some kind of crowd favorite thing. And now three teams and the replacement person from Kentucky are on it. Everyone else, I think this is their second go around.
Yeah, I was interested to hear what you thought of that in terms of the Truman Show-ness of it. Like, it seemed a little weird that she was just there waiting to, in case people aren't familiar, one of the racers, like half the team, had some pancreas attack and couldn't compete. So they substituted someone else from that team's home state Mallory. Who used to be on another team. And I just thought it was a little, I mean, it was, I guess, good for the other half of the team, but it did read a little fishy.
Well, did they not say that she was his daughter? The daughter of Pancreas Guy?
Oh, no, no. They
did
gave,
I just make that up?
Yes. No, no. They did mention, they gave the sick guy, what's his name? What did we say? Bobber. Bopper.
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 Not Bobber.
As I was saying to Dara before, I thought it was Popper at first, but but we'll get to looking in a bit. Bopper's daughter gave, quote, made something for Mallory to actually race with. Which, again, which shenanigans on that, like, you know, he brought that thinking that, you know, I just think he knew that he probably wasn't going to race way in advance, you know, so all of it was, I'm not saying they didn't necessarily replicate some of the emotions of it, but I think this was all production.
Yeah. I mean, I think he got some free CBS healthcare out of it. You know, he got a free diagnosis maybe out of it. But
I mean, Cedars-Sinai is a nice hospital. Yeah. That's where I would want to go if I, you know, had some pancreas issue.
But yeah, that was a bit. I mean, that is sort of my trouble with reality shows. And, you know, Amazing Race is often held to be the most sort of realistic of reality shows of that ilk, of the task-based non-singing reality show. But yeah, it sort of started off a little weak in that regard with that whole storyline. It did seem a little produced, for sure.
Yeah. Plus, it's very heavy on a season that I didn't enjoy. I think it might have been season 22, or whatever season they were all on when I was covering it for one of my old gigs. And John and Jessica are from that season, the YouTube couple, or the YouTube friends.
They're always on.
Oh,
yeah.
My God.
And he's so much better than he was at the beginning of his initial season. Like, his hair is better. He's less screechy. I mean, try to imagine that squared, and that's what he was like.
Oh, God.
I mean, he was a good friend to his partner. Like, I will give him credit for being a good teammate. And he was just starting to calm down, and then they fucked up and got eliminated, which was too bad. But who else is on for... Oh, the country singers, I think?
Oh, the blondes.
Cord.
Are from that season, and they're... Ugh.
Yeah, and their big identifying thing is that they're not going to flirt so much this time, which obviously means they're going to flirt a lot this time, which I'm not really looking forward to.
I mean, they were already doing it in the scenes from next week.
Yeah, yeah. So
that lasted all of an episode.
Yeah. Hey, give us the express pass. Yeah.
Okay. I thought maybe the Anthony Michael Hall clone would finally have departed the porta closet with which he was traveling last time.
Oh, shit.
Well,
fire.
I wasn't going to say it, but our esteemed guest mentioned it in his recap. And
independent thinking, we did not consult on this, so I don't know.
Listen, yeah. I've been spending this whole season of couples therapy saying that John Gosselin's girlfriend is gay. Don't sue me. That's 100% speculation, but, you know.
Right, right.
She's dating John Gosselin.
Yeah.
Anyway. Yeah, it's weird that he, I mean, I didn't pick up on that. Maybe I wasn't paying close enough attention. As we've already established, I thought someone was someone's daughter. But she's so beautiful, that half of the couple.
Yeah,
she should be able to find a guy who's straight, wants to touch her parts.
You think, yeah, I don't know.
Dead parts.
No, Dave, not her dick.
Oh. His hair does speak against the gay theory, but... Nothing else does.
Okay, so explain how for those of us who maybe are watching for the very first time in several seasons, what is the difference between the Express Pass and the old Fast Forward? Is the Fast Forward still a thing in the game?
The Fast Forward, I believe, is still a thing in the game, but it only comes up once or twice per season.
Okay.
Whereas
so
it used to be every leg.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
The Express Pass allows a team to skip a particular task, believe.
Not a whole leg.
Sarah, back me up on that.
I believe it's a
task.
Okay.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I think it's a task. Although even the Fast Forward was like, they would make you do a couple things. They would make you put up with some crap. And then they'd be like, okay, now you can go to the pit stop.
Right.
But yeah, the Express Pass, and they still have the U-turn too, right?
Right.
Because sometimes from season to season, they just swap out whatever. They're like, why don't we try a jug handle? And it doesn't work out. And they're like, okay, let's not do that one for a while.
Well, not that it happened in this episode, but I think the worst is the double U-turn, mm-hmm. because then the team that gets U-turn just ends up passing on the U-turn to another team, and it like never really particularly, I mean, not literally, but in, you know, in practice, that's what happens.
I see.
And it's, you know, it's not great.
So yeah. I have a question about enjoying The Amazing Race. How do you deal with, like, how do you watch it knowing how produced it is and still feel like you have stakes in the game? That's my problem with this show. And I acknowledge it's well made, but like the way they try to engineer the actual race part of it, like where you know in your heart that these teams are actually 20, 30, 40 minutes apart, but they edit it in a way that makes it seem like, you know, they're chasing each other. You know that they're compressing time and they're creating stories and there's a lot of, you know, bunching, you know, when things are closed and stuff like that. Like, it's such a produced timeline. I have trouble actually feeling like I'm invested in what's going on. And then it comes down to, like, people watching. Is that it? Is that I just don't enjoy people watching where other people do?
I mean,
I'm trying to understand.
So my personal favorite thing, which happens less and less, and really I don't expect to happen much at all this season, which is why I probably won't have any stakes, is when... when teams have the wherewithal to have some smart critical thinking mm-hmm. about puzzles or racing or whatever, you know, pieces of strategy that you might not think of on the fly.
But can I give you an example from the first episode?
Sure.
The big sort of challenge was on top of the largest tower in the city, and they sort of had this, you know, horizontal Ferris wheel, which is not a Ferris wheel. Come on. And you know,
I won't tell you how many minutes we spent arguing about whether this was or was not a Ferris wheel.
It was,
but it
tilted.
Was more than five.
Barely. And
well,
then
it's
they had
a
tilt-a, you know,
wheel then, or whirl.
And the Ferris whirl. The challenge was get in one of the gondola little capsules, close the door, and then check to see if the clue was either a try again clue, in which case you had to wait for the wheel to revolve a couple times or whatever, get out, try another one. So the challenge was lotto. Like, there was no skill involved in that.
Well, and no, there wasn't any skill involved, but there was some.
It was engineered to test relationships and how well they could work together in a stress situation. I grant that. I just thought it was a curious choice for the first big challenge of the season.
I mean, I thought it was boring for sure. I will agree on that. But I do think there was the twist that all the good clues were in the even numbered mm-hmm. Cars, and that lent at least like a little bit of an interactive part to it, where when more teams showed up, you had more information about where the good clues were. So there was at least a little bit, you know, a little bit beyond complete random chance, I think.
I just felt like it kind of felt like you were playing Myst or something. You know what I mean? Where it was just like this one clue you had to figure out by clicking and poking on the interface and then you'll get it. But there's no actual...
I don't disagree. And, you know, the only part I really actually enjoyed of that is when the teams were trapped and they were fighting.
That's what I'm saying. I mean, as a social experiment, that was an interesting challenge. But I wonder if that was the best choice for an introduction to the to the season, not to the show, obviously, after 24 seasons.
But it also had, I mean, there was also the element of that was, to me, it's classic Amazing Race to do that needle in the haystack thing where it's like you have to figure out your way to the right store in
sure.
order to get your clue. Like,
that task I thought was good. Yeah.
Yeah.
The bridal
shop. But to me, that seems like a travel task, right? I mean, you know, the game is the traveling across the world. Finding a retail outlet makes sense to me. Going to one of 24 capsules and finding or not the clue by a relative random chance doesn't seem very...
But I think with that many teams in the game still, you know, the first episode is always a little that. Mm-hmm. It's like you drive to the airport, you get on a plane, you land in whatever the first country is.
Thanks,
you have
Ford.
A task. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the cannon fodder identifies itself quickly, but mm-hmm. I mean, that's part of what I like about it too, is that you don't always know. Like, there are certain teams that are very competent at being teams and at traveling and have a good combination of all the things you need to succeed on this race, which is like understanding probability, being able to run around a lot and be sweaty and not mind, not freaking out when you're second to last. Like, those are all qualities that right. successful teams have. But then there are certain tasks that, like, I mean, as our colleague Linda Holmes used to point out, what was it she called it? Race fatigue, where yeah. like sometimes teams
killer
would
fatigue,
just
I think it was.
Yeah, yeah. hit a wall yeah. and like they just all systems started breaking down. But there's certain tasks that like you never know what team it's going to be. Like sometimes the team that you least expect, but it's like you have to eat fucking 50 meatballs in 30 seconds, and then there's someone who's just like destroyed by right. this psychologically, in addition to it being an impressive physical challenge and sort of gross out TV and one of the many reasons I can never go on that show. A being all the flying, B being I don't like to sleep outdoors, C being every other reason. But I sort of enjoy that it's not totally random, but that there is that psychological element of like, oh, you're the ones who were good at X and you're the ones who were completely baffled by like trying to build some Tetris-y thing and you start fighting. I mean, I think it's well constructed in that way too, that there are a lot of different ways it could go horribly wrong and I'm watching for it to go horribly wrong.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you. All I was going to say was to Dave's point, I think there's also the matter of balance in a leg where it's like, if you have the task where you have to be running around and expending a lot of psychological energy, like trying to find the one weird thing in the giant space, the next task has to have some element of like, okay, now you can sit down for a second and just like be alone with your teammate and like recover. I don't disagree with you, Dave.
It's actually
I'm
sort
just
of
saying.
Like training a dog.
Uh-huh. Go
you know,
on.
I mean...
No, because, I mean, when you train a dog, you know, they have this sort of, like, sine wave of energy, and you're supposed to, like, tire them out and then train them, and, you know, and then they go up and down. It kind of feels like it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. I mean, if, you know, it's sort of like, you know, some terrible, horrible experiment they're doing on these people. And I totally get what you're saying, Sarah, that there is something to enjoy in watching teams cope with a very engineered challenge. And... I find I can't separate the end game with some of the stuff that happens in between and think of it as like a competition in the capital C sense of the word.
Well, and I do admire the fact that when this show first started taping, it was what, early 2001? Mm-hmm. And in every season since, they've had to add an element of not surprise, but like suspense, I guess, to flights that are extremely tightly controlled in a way that when the show first started, they really weren't.
Right.
So if you watch season one episodes, there's like a lot more suspense about who's going to be flying where, and they can just run up to the gate waving cash around and get on the plane. You could never do that
right.
now. Yeah. And the other thing that I was going to say, I totally forgot. Someone else talk.
Sorry.
I was going to say, just going back to the, you know, liking watching strategic decisions. I mean, what this episode lacked to me is that, essentially, mm-hmm. almost right down to the detour, which you usually have the chance to weigh two tasks and figure out which one is best for your team. And this one didn't have that at all, you know. Even like the, you know, little things like the decision whether to take the metro or a cab. I feel like in earlier seasons, they would have spent some time with the teams and covered why they did that. And this time they just kind of flew through that. And maybe it's
yeah.
just a network decision not to spend time on that anymore, but I miss it.
And they also, I feel like the money, their like weekly budget or their episode budget used to play a bigger role. That they were given these random, it's like you have, you know, 317 euros for this leg of the race. And I feel like we never hear about that anymore. They're just like, given what they need.
I think it came up once last season where people talked about conserving money, but it's so infrequently discussed that it's kind of lost all meaning at this point. You know, there's no
right,
context
exactly.
for it anymore.
I yeah. bet they had a economic downturn era test, audience test, where they're like, we don't like seeing people beg for money.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's a good
right.
point.
Because that is where it used to go a lot of the time. Yeah. That's yeah. true. And I also... like, it just gave me, like, social anxiety yeah. to watch mm-hmm. that yeah. often. Because it was always teams like Will and Tara that it's like, ooh. Yeah.
Although I will, you, I will say,
if you're on fire, I don't want to see you ask you people.
They actually had a task, part of a detour last year, that was begging. So you know, maybe I don't
controlled begging.
Maybe once.
Yeah, I think they called it busking, though, right, John?
Yeah. They did call it busking. Yeah. You had to dress up in a funny costume, and you know that was the thing. So at least you were putting on some performance, I suppose.
Right.
But, speaking of audience testing, what do you think of the? It would never fly because America, but. If they could have, like, Amazing Race anti-stars, where it's just, like, the most just devious teams, just the ones that play to win and are dicks, and you put all those people in together with no goody-two-shoes, no, you know, happy-go-luckies, that would be probably more towards the show I thought in my head Amazing Race was always going to be, which was... I'm a self-described travel expert. I'm going to win this one. I know all the tricks. I know how to do it. Nobody's going to stop me. And I find sometimes people lack that killer instinct in these, or are playing to the camera so that they appear to be a lot nicer than they are. And of course, there are very nice people on the show too. But I would love to see that in some alternate universe where that would be possible.
But I don't think it's so much because America. I think it's because that game already is Survivor. Like, Amazing Race doesn't have as many opportunities for you to, like, either help or hinder the other teams. It really is just usually a matter of, like, when you get where and what you're doing and how good you are.
But I do see what you're doing, Dave, in that I think, you know, even when someone, you know, maybe cuts a line on the show.
Or the U-turn.
Regarded as like this huge moral betrayal, which, you like, know, I like many... to see contestants who don't, you know, who are just
Well, it's
to
not
play,
the amazing you know? Montessori school, as I've been found a billion times. Like, you're trying to win. It's a race.
And I'll admit, I always like to see the villains of a show be the centerpiece of things. Sure. So that's my thing.
Sure.
I realize that may not be entertaining. When I say because America, I realize that's not what most people want.
I think when they split the difference on Survivor, heroes versus villains, the villains were certainly the more compelling
entertainers
storyline.
So can we close it out with bets or picks, wishes for what team's going to go the furthest here?
I'll just say I'm glad that Nadia and Natalie were out first, because all I could think the entire time they were on was that my sister's technique for dealing with her daughters when they are annoying like that is to say, I can't understand whining. And that's what I felt the entire time. I can't understand what you're saying. Talk like normal people. That the screeching and the whining, it was so insufferable.
Plus, they used up a season's quota of the term hot mess, just in that one episode. So
at least they referred to the Afghanimals as that, which I was you will be allowed to live. I didn't watch last season, but they really are as annoying as you said, John. And they were on screen for like... 1.5 minutes.
I thought on my way over here that I want to start calling them the Garanimals, just because I think it'll annoy them. All right, it's happening. It's happening in the next one. Yeah.
The Garanimals.
I don't know. I thought Luke and Margie were really solid this app. You know, I don't know. It's hard to tell because it wasn't super challenge. Like, the roadblock was.
So why don't we just put it as, who do you hope wins?
I would say Kentucky, just because I want to see how an odd couple team that doesn't have anything, any past context for being on a team together would go. I'm curious to know if they'll be more polite with each other and more on their best behavior than people who've known each other their whole lives would be.
Well, next week's promos would suggest no.
Oh, yeah.
Well.
But there's a stressful event
maybe
that happens.
That's the maybe lesson they'll they have come to learn.
Yeah, maybe it'll be the glue that brings them together. Yeah, I don't know.
I'm going to vote Harlem Globetrotters because when Flight Time was in his little flippy costume and what's the other one's name?
Big Easy.
Big Easy is like, you look like a black turkey.
They
He's like, that's why they call me Flight Time. Like, they're very likable, but not like, meh. And I hope Dave and Connor do well, too, because an injury knocked them out the last time, and they seem also, like, nice, positive to root for, but not, meh, nice. So, one of those two.
Dave?
I think out of this team, I would probably hope for the same as Sarah, the basketball players. I think they are not coyingly trying to be, you know, the audience favorites. That's just natural. It comes to them, right? And they're showmen, and it kind of, there's a certain sort of go with it quality I think you need as a Globetrotter. And I think it kind of shows in what they do.
And if they don't win, they can just go back to their home world and be theoretical physicists again.
Who dares? Suggesters of dunk.
Yeah, I'd agree. And just also, I'd like to see their move on crossing the finish line. Like,
yeah.
I think that could be really cool.
Oh, and props for Phil's eyebrow steel being magnificent. Yes.
God love
it. I wrote that in the coverage, actually. I was like, it defies biology and physics. Like, his face is a little bit more angular, so the eyebrow pop is even more pointed now. It's amazing.
The last thing I'll say is it's impossible to watch this show without projecting yourself into it, even still after all these years, and just thinking, I don't know if I would do better if I was on a team with Sarah or with Dave. which would be the more disastrous. Because I feel like, Sarah, if it was you and me, if we ran into anything, we'd just be like, oh, fuck it, and just quit.
Yeah, we totally would.
Do you want to do this? No. Let's go back to the hotel.
You get like a month off in a spa, don't you? If you
Maybe we're right. Maybe this is something we should pursue.
The amazing one free month at a hotel.
Hey.
All right, it's time to go around the dial. Everybody's bringing a TV topic to talk about. Tara, what do you got?
Downton Abbey season 4 is officially over. Now they had the season finale last week, and then as we record this, the Christmas special was on last night. John, I know you stayed with it for the whole season.
Oh, I did. Yeah.
And what did you think?
You know, the show's best days, I think, are behind it.
Let's put it that way. I still like it, but it's not good.
I wrote that I just think, at its bones, it's something that I'm always going to be in the bag for, unless they super screw it up. I also don't, I'm the only one, but I don't mind Rose as much as everyone else. You know, just,
oh, you're the one.
Yeah, I am the one. I don't know. I just feel like the show does need someone younger, you know, otherwise everyone's going to be, I don't know, taking fish oil and hobbling around in a few years and I don't know.
Eating their Horlicks.
Yeah.
Right.
Exactly. But, I mean, I think this podcast has covered the love square that went nowhere. Thank God they shipped Ivy off to America. That at least, you know, I could kind of see the producers meekly apologizing for that one. Maybe,
I guess, but as I wrote in my article about it, I was so annoyed that they wasted so much of our time with it. And then now, like, not even together. Like, they're all so far apart. They're never going to see each other again.
Totally.
Why did we?
The two left, Daisy and Jimmy, are like, that's not happening.
No, of course not.
Plus, why does Daisy keep turning down jobs? Like, does she want to die at Downton? I don't know.
I mean, I
think she should just go to that farm with that nice old man. And,
flash forward 70 years in the future, there's a stuffed Daisy posed like a bear in the parlor.
Oh, my God.
But the real question is Sarah Bunting on Downton Abbey.
Well.
Yes, let's hear about Sarah Bunting on Sarah Bunting.
I was thrilled to note that she must be back next season.
Oh, for sure. Sarah.
Well, Sarah D. Bunting has actually been sufficiently bored by season 4. Like, keeping in mind, I only started watching the show because I was getting, like, whatever my vanity Google alerts kept popping her up. And I was like, fine, God, I'll watch stupid Downton Abbey. And I loved it. But this season is like, since it's not marathonable for me, some people have methods. That's fine. I don't ask. But I've been watching it on a weekly basis. And it's like, it's kind of been just stacking up on the DVR. Like, I have gotten to her, whatever, their meet cute with her and Tom at the Pinko Club or whatever the hell he was doing, whatever speaker
no,
he
Pinko
was saying.
No, Pinko Club, that's what it was called.
Pinko
Club.
Right, okay. And like, okay, fine, but I've absolutely never cared about Sybil or Sibby or Tom or any of the like class wars thing to do with that. And the fact that he is still like ancillarily there. And that's who Sarah Bunting. I mean, there's so many of these storylines that I'm like, once it's on, I'm sort of, it's not unpleasant to watch, but unless it's the Dowager Countess and Isabel, I don't care. It's really hard for me to care.
It's so soapy, and the plot lines progress so slowly.
Well, not only do they progress.
And my husband is making me fast forward through Bates at this point, that he's like, oh, Mr. Bates.
Good
I'm
call.
Like, I know.
He's a smart man.
Married him for a reason. Yeah.
But season 4 plots, you have the rape plot line. You have the Mary's many suitors plot line. You have the love square / Alfred going to cooking school thing, whatever that was. And there's another one I forget. But all four of them have this in common, which is they just go in these little loops.
Yeah.
where that individual storyline resets about four times during the season.
Well, they even did it with Edith, where it's like she she plays the baby for adoption, and then at the end is like, just kidding.
Take backs.
And
I hope the Schraders sue her and drag her name through the mud.
It was just like they wrote the first episode and the last episode, and then they had one in the middle, and they just cloned that six times. Yeah.
I couldn't believe she thought it would be so simple to show up in Switzerland and be like, I'd like my baby back now, please. Like,
well,
I don't know.
Well, and also, what does Barrow have on What's-Her-Face?
They never said.
No,
they
never said. What do we think it is?
Oh, God.
Because it's going to be something so boring. Like, no, you know.
Well, I mean, it has to be if she finally was like, fine, just tell them I don't care. Like, if it was really that scandalous, she would be trying harder to stop him from revealing whatever.
Yeah, it's
it is.
Probably not anything.
She's as
like,
bored as we
know,
are.
I it's can't imagine not anything what illegal. It could be. Yeah.
I really like her too.
I like her too, but
probably
not
my
with
favorite
Molesley.
New character. But
she could do better than
yeah,
Molesley.
She could do better than
Molesley. Oh my god!
What about Paul Giamatti's turn in the Christmas special?
He was fun.
Right. Yeah,
yeah,
I enjoyed him. Yeah,
it was a nice little bit.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I mean, for one episode, it was a fully realized character for sure. I felt like.
And next season, Richard E. Grant and your Dave's girlfriend.
I do love him.
Anna Chancellor from The Hour are both going to be in it.
Ooh.
Oh.
He plays a politics, another Pinko type, I think, and she plays a lady something.
Ooh, a but, lady something.
You know, if we're going to keep piling on with the Go Nowhere stories, as much as I love Isabel, it's like, just put up a sign that says closed for business if you're going to turn down every suitor, you know.
Yeah. This one she seems more interested in, which I felt bad for the doctor because I thought they were a better match.
Yeah, I agree.
Anyway.
Me too. And the way he pronounces pneumonia... kind of hot. I don't know.
All right. So we'll see you next season, Downton Abbey. Sarah.
American Idol. Get this. It's still on. And it's actually, I mentioned this in my coverage of it last week when I did a sober second thought on the show and then decided to stick with it for the season and just do little capsule, like to-go reviews.
I love it.
Because that's about the attention that you need to devote to it. But
totally.
Here's the thing. They moved it on the schedule. The ratings are like, they're not even in the toilet anymore. They're somewhere under the house right now. But I don't know if it's cause or effect, but it's like when they moved America's Next Top Model to Friday and were like, you know, sink or swim. It was like this fuck it approach where they're like, well, why don't we just actually make it about the singing? And get some judges who care and not have it be about drama. They got rid of like most of the audition lead up stuff, that it's just auditions and not these, you know, crazy people with personality disorders who are trying to get on TV and unfunny responses from the judges. Harry Connick Jr. He gets a lot of boos, but that's total like producers holding up a boo sign. He's really good. He's sugar free. Keith Urban is surprisingly, I thought he was just going to be, you know, he's in Randy Jackson's chair. I thought he would be similarly useless. He's also on point, and I'm kind of liking J-Lo. Mm-hmm. She evinced maybe a glimmer of having enjoyed someone else who had a sense of humor the other day. It's kind of interesting.
She
never thought I would see that happen.
She's never looked better. That's for sure.
That's true.
Well, that's I never true. Thought I would see the day that you would voluntarily watch American Idol. So I'm impressed at your open heart for this elderly reality show.
Well, it just kind of was like, you know what? Let's get back to what this originally was, I think, when it was in Britain, which is like we're actually trying to find a good singer.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I mean, it's not like the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire on 18 times a week anymore.
Right.
It's like if you quit after a certain point, I think it would be a good time to come back to it. I have been pleased. And if you don't feel like doing that, I can tell you which 4 minutes you need to watch the next day. Join
Sarah,
us.
Sarah, are they still doing as much of the Hollywood auditions coverage as they used to?
That
was always
no,
my least
but
favorite.
They're doing, I came in once they picked the finalists.
Oh,
so I'm not sure how they did it before, but I believe they're doing that thing they used to do in early days where they put everyone in groups. And then it's kind of like this horrible psych experiment with some singing.
Oh my god, like business school?
And then
school?
They make cuts there. Yeah.
It's coming back, the show you never wanted, Heroes. Don't call it a series, miniseries coming 2015.
Does this... Ugh. Yeah. I mean, ugh. Well, like, I saw... I was reading some coverage of it, and I saw Milo Ventimiglia in the picture.
Uh-huh.
And, like, my heart rate went up.
I thought he just... Didn't he just get cast in something, though?
Yes.
Yeah, so...
Yeah, he won't be back. Yeah.
Oh, no, nobody's going to be back, except for maybe...
Zachary Quinto. Just kidding. He's the only one who will...
Like, the only buddy I can think that... Well, actually might be back.
Burn.
Jack Coleman.
Is,
I bet they could get him.
The Japanese guy whose name I forget.
Hiro?
Matsuoka.
Let's set aside season 2 and 3, which in season 1 was, you know, pretty good. It wasn't like super awesome. But
no, but it was fun.
Enjoyable, right?
If it had ended there, it would have been a great show.
Fun is the perfect word for Hiro season 1.
And a miniseries.
And I think he was sort of like one of the crowd favorites.
Sure,
and
I guess.
Unfortunately, he has done very little since Heroes. And so
I don't know how you can say that when he was in the Get Smart spinoff movie that went straight to tape.
Oh, no.
But Ando just turned up on Justified.
He did.
So, yeah, I was very happy to see him.
Me too.
But yeah, this seems
I was just going to say, I liked Ando better. I thought he was cuter. I don't know.
He still looks good. He's on Justified. This he just came back.
Well, he wasn't so I'm doing comic relief
Yes.
You know, yeah.
I assume this is going to go, like, we're going to be dealing with, you know, 80%. They're going to Dallas it, right? There's going to be 80% new cast with a couple people that can, you know, they can get on.
Yeah.
And it'll be a mini series unless it just happens to do really good. And then it'll be, well, guess what? We're going to do the public a solid. It's now a show again.
Of course. It'll be just like Under the Dome, like I wrote in my angry, angry post.
Very
about
angry.
It.
Yes. You got to mean what you say, people. When it comes to miniseries versus series, you're going to have one Tara Ariano.
Heroes reboring.
Series length pop on
listen,
your case.
And the other thing is, why are they announcing it now when it's not coming till 2015? Like, there are
Olympics.
Properties. Okay, but there are properties that NBC could revive that people would be excited about for a year. Like, if they were, like, coming in 2015. Friends! Like, yes, people would be on board with that.
That was my favorite thing about the press release when they were just like, social media is an important thing these days, so we're going to roll out, you know, character videos in, like, September.
Please don't.
Just like, wow, NBC.
don't do that.
Yeah. The internet might not exist by the
Heroes,
time you catch up to social media.
Seriously. In real time. And lastly, John.
So I want to talk about Looking, because I know you guys covered it on the when it premiered, but it's 6 episodes in, or... I assume Dave is probably not watching it, but I don't know, Tara and Sarah?
No, I'm still watching it. Dave has not.
Well, you guys had a great discussion on it. One thing that I thought maybe, just because it's easy to ignore when shows do this well, when they do it badly, it clanks. But I really think from the beginning that the show has been very convincing in the three leads being friends.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they did it with an assured hand. They didn't feel the need to, you know, have each character reminisce about that time we did this and blah, blah, blah.
Yes.
You know, it just had a very authentic feel.
College,
exactly. Which in a lesser show would totally do. But in context of last night's episode, which Mark Blankenship, past guest and friend of the show, ripped apart Augustine.
Yeah, he was mad.
Yeah, I wanted to talk about that. Yeah. because I think it's a great example of... While that's a character failing, it's not the show's failing. I think
so. What happened?
It only last episode was a complete. All they did was focus on Patrick and his new boyfriend. A week ago, and they just started dating, and it was a very clever device they used, focusing on them the whole time because it kind of gave the feeling that you have at the beginning of a relationship where, like, the other person is, like, all you're thinking about. And before you get back to the reality of life, you know, they had this, like little capsule where the other two people were the only things going on. So this week is where things start to get real. He brings, Patrick brings Richie, his boyfriend, to meet his friends. And Augustine is a total... He's got a lot of other issues going on at this point, but he is a total dick about it. He accused Patrick of, quote, slumming, which is not a word that we should use in this day and age really at all, and was just mean. But I think it speaks to the show that the way I saw it is that he has dealt with a lot of Patrick's stuff over the years, and he felt entitled to speak to him that way, and Patrick's reaction kind of back that up, I think, and just kind of again, drove home the point that those two are really close and have been good friends. Maybe they won't be from here on out. But again, that's not the show's failing in drawing this relationship. It's just a choice that the show is making mm-hmm. and the failings of the characters and everything. So I thought, that's one of the reasons I think the show is great. So
And we discussed the first episode, which I think we all thought showed promise, but it was a little one-dimensional in what it was talking about. And even Mark Blankenship, you know, who's covering the show for us, said, like, it, you know, you need to, like, watch
yeah.
a few to get the feel of the show.
He really got on board with
he
it.
He did, yeah.
And when you did it, I had actually seen the first four, and I knew, I agreed with you that the pilot was the weakest.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's interesting, like, you see it with Patrick and with Dom. Yes, they're talking about relationships so much in the first episode, but you see that they're kind of in a state of their development where they kind of judge themselves mm-hmm. and see, they worry about, like, who they date reflecting who they are yeah. rather than just saying, like, fuck it, I'm gonna like who I like.
Yeah, and know? On pilots, you know, the temptation is often to over-explain a lot of what's going on. And I think another temptation is to, like, treat everything like you have to nail the tone of something. And I think maybe that's what they're doing a little in the pilot.
Right.
And right. to the detriment of maybe, like, having a fully fleshed out, you know, sort of bird's eye view of what's going on, or at least, you know, like, mixing it up. But it sounds like with HBO, they had the luxury of knowing they got a full season commitment and they were able to take their time. And when you watch a pilot, sometimes it got a little bit of right. pilotitis. That's all.
So yeah. The TLDR is that I think the show has turned into, you know, what you guys hoped it would yep. in your analysis.
I agree.
In the first.
I think it's been yeah. really good.
Very cool.
I had three very silly one of them was Dave's, two of them were mine. RTs of content that was up on the site this week. RTs being retweets.
Thanks, Tara. Thanks, Mom.
Well, I don't know. Not everyone's on Twitter. Hannibal Buress, who plays Lincoln on...
Thanks, Uncle Stevie.
who plays Lincoln on Broad City. He retweeted the story that I had written about him, not the most recent one, but the week before, an expedited shipping about him and Alana. John Daly, who plays Peter Paparazzo and coach teacher, and Wendy Shawn on Kroll Show, tweeted a link to my comparison of Gigolo House from the last Kroll Show to the Showtime show Gigolos. And then Dave had tweeted a picture of the press kit that we got from the Americans, and the creator of that show.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he faved it and retweeted it. Yeah.
Thanks, so, iPhone camera.
So last week on Previously TV, I submitted a little piece in the logline department, which is one of my favorite departments. The 902-101s are genius, and you should go back and read them. But also all the LNO ones are great, too. So I pitched one a few weeks ago for Star Trek The Next Generation, Season 1.
Thank God.
And, you know, spent a few weeks rewatching it at my leisure and... put up this very silly, you know, 1 to 2 sentence description of all the episodes, and it kind of caught fire and exploded over on Reddit. And was really kind of fun and exciting, not just to see the piece widely read, but also to see, like, how many people still care about the
yeah.
show.
Yeah.
It was a lot of fun.
It's a very beloved show.
Yeah, yeah, it is.
Refresh my memory, what season do we have to wait until the video game Google Glass episode?
I think that's not until 5, actually, right. Which is a while down the road.
Good things come to those who wait.
Yeah. It's going to happen. I already have written it in my head.
It is time for the canon, and today I have brought you something I am bringing you Series 1, Episode 2 of Look Around You. The episode is called Water. Now, you may not be familiar with this show. It sort of flew under the radar here in the U.S., I think. It is a creation from Peter Serafinowicz and Robert Popper. Mm-hmm. And it's got two seasons. The first season is a parody of 70s educational sort of science films. And the second series is more sort of late 80s.
Infotainment.
Yeah.
It has kind of a real people sort of vibe.
Sort of. It's like Mr. Wizard. There's a show in the UK called Tomorrow's People or something like that. That is sort of like more of a direct parody of. But
the second season were longer episodes, right?
Yes. Yeah. They were a half hour.
First season are just sort of like Adult Swim sized morsels. And the second season is a full half hour show. Boy, do I love this show. It is so right up my wheelhouse. The first series is parodying an era of educational films, which I, you know, had to watch as a child in school. You have to remember that educational films, you often see the stuff that was made anywhere from 15 years up to 1 year before you got to school. So these things sort of have a 60s, 70s vibe, and they nail the look, the sound, the feel.
The voice of the narrator.
The narration is just perfect. And it is really super silly, super dry humor. I will warn you, if you don't like nonsensical stuff, you would do well to stay away from this show.
It will not teach you anything either, by the way.
No.
The facts that are presented are very incorrect.
For example, the opening of Water, at the beginning of it, they just say, look around you, look around you. And they have all these visual cues about what the show is, this episode is supposedly about. And the opening to this episode is just some old lady making apple pie for like 2 minutes.
Yeah.
That is just like,
that's right.
Have you guessed? Well, yeah.
And it makes it look so revolting too. It was really great. It was like one of the revolting snacks videos did with my brother where we like set Peeps on fire and stuff like that.
The lighting, yeah. It's like the footage looks like they just cracked open the can from 1981 and found it.
It's not a normal size pie she's making either. This is like industrial size.
Cobbler, maybe. Yeah, it might be a cobbler.
But I clipped the start of the show. You heard a little bit about ants making igloos out of very small pieces of ice. And that was part of this episode. It's hard to actually clip a lot of audio from this because most of the jokes are visual.
Yes.
The first series episodes all follow the same format, which is there's a little bit of preamble, you know, pick up your notebooks, and then they go into the thing with the look around you, and then they have a little chunk where they're just talking about the subject matter, and I clipped this, my one and only clip during the canon. This is a lead up to talking all about water.
Water. Delicious, refreshing water. From ocean to sea to lake to pool to pond to puddle to drop to drip. Water, chemical symbol H20, is all around us. It's the giver of life. And it's there with us from our first cup of tea in the morning to our nightly bithuvi.
I say...
What is water? It's a difficult question because water is impossible to describe. One might ask the same about birds. What are birds? We just don't know.
And so after that, the format, you get a couple experiments, just like you would, you know, back when, and you're supposed to follow along in your books. And the experiments are just these crazy things. And, you know, like the first one ends up, they're making their whiskey. And then the other one, ants are making igloos out of little pieces of ice.
Yep.
It's super silly. It's very British. The production is aces. If you like Peter Serafinowicz, you've seen
his
show.
You will see his nose and lips in this episode.
Yeah.
That's it. And hand.
Just a lot of silliness. I don't know. I love it. The gag where there's another one where they're boiling the egg. I don't think it's this episode, right?
No, it is.
Oh, it is this episode.
No, it is, and the feather is sticking out.
Boiling point of 1,000 degrees.
That's right, it's the first one.
And then he just sticks his hand in there.
Yeah.
Well, and it's a runner, because he keeps sticking it in. I know. It's
redder and redder.
The third time he tries with the egg spoon and drops it in the water.
It's so good.
Oh, my God.
And if you like a show like Arrested Development or things like that, where they're very particular about running jokes and about continuity, this sort of has that attitude about it, I think. And I think there's a lot of really good little pieces. Like the end of every episode, they tell you about what is going to be on the next episode. That never is.
Right.
But the capper to this episode is next episode, we're going to talk about romance. And it's just some scientists pointing to stuff with pencils, which is always what they point with.
Well, I believe that's his real wife playing the lady at the end of it as well.
Look around you, super silly. The first season speaks to me. I think second season is more of a crowd favorite and is more accessible. It has sort of a Monty Python-esque feel to it, where this one is more grounded in being a direct parody of educational films. But boy, I love this series. It was a joy to find. If you haven't seen it, seek it out. I rest my case.
Yeah, well, it's funny that you bring up Monty Python, Dave, because I watched it cold, and I'm very glad I did. Like, my only signpost was that, well, Dave did this, so so I caught on a little bit more quickly than I might have, but I actually did feel it had very certain Python-esque elements to it, in the way that Monty Python's Flying Circus just was not afraid to go off onto a complete tangent about something and make that a whole other thing. Reined in a little bit by the fact that they stuck to the science-y format. But I swear to God, I could just remember in elementary school, having a substitute teacher and, watching films like that.
This is the kind of film that the teacher would put on then disappear for 20 minutes, probably to have a smoke or a belt of whiskey.
Oh, my God. It was amazing. And the other thing that struck me was, it reminded me of the mini that you just did where you did everything wrong on the purpose. And I apologize to, was it Ken?
Ken B.
Yeah, because he's been a really good sport about that. But I swear to God, that's the first thing that popped into my mind. It was hilarious. So, I mean, it's hard to, I could just list all the jokes in it, but, people might as well watch it. But it was
so this is the first episode you've really seen.
It's the first episode I saw. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Just dove right into it. So.
Me? I love this. Longtime listeners of this podcast in the first iteration will know faux educational films are one of my favorite tropes. Mm-hmm. From Lost to Harvey Birdman, Attorney at Law, to The Venture Brothers, and so on. So when we first discovered Look Around You when it started airing on Adult Swim, it was like a revelation. Why wasn't this in my life the whole time? there's the commitment to the bit is perfect. The selection of the B-roll is perfect also. I mean, it's just, if this is the kind of thing you like, you will like it a lot. That's really all I can say. And before Sarah proceeds, when we got to the end of watching this, I said, I think John will vote this in and Sarah will not. So I'm curious to know what Sarah thought.
And just to wrap that up, by the way, before Sarah goes to as far as the tangents, the one they're talking about water the whole time and then it turns into a French translation. And that's the part where you have to write that you have to write down in the workbook. Oh my God, that just killed me. Anyway,
Sarah.
I had never heard of this before. I had never seen one before. My notes are as follows. 20 go to 10, which is where they sort of got me. And then the next note is this a joke? Because it was so, everything about the commitment to the bit, like you said, was so firm.
It's so straight-faced.
Everything from the zoom in to the person typing on whatever that was, an Atari 2600, or I mean, not that, but you know what I mean? Possibly a Wang. That's what she said. To the font, to I know for a fact that I think it's iMovie has a setting where you can age up your quote stock and there'll be a hair that will repeat on the film. Quote on the film. So I could tell sort of what settings they were using in terms of the fuzziness and scratchiness. And by the time it got to what are birds? We just don't know. That it was very similar to actual British public TV, like Lord Kenneth Clark's Civilization, where he's basically like, in 13 episodes, I will teach you everything about art in the Western world ever. And you're like, wow. And just the quality of the light in it. I mean, it was amazing. And also, I was laughing hysterically. Like, I have been saying variations on thanks, ants. Thanks. For like 2 days now.
Yes.
But like, a, whatever, the cat has a hairball. I'm like, nah, thanks a lot, cats.
I had some trouble choosing. I had trouble choosing one. There's six episodes in the first series, and there's like one about maths, and there's one about calcium or something. And the reason I chose this one was for thanks, ants. Thanks.
Yeah.
Just
I have to tell you one more thing, Dave, that I think you'll get a kick out of. The gas mafipulating. I took a look on Urban Dictionary, and it's actually up there as a straight, like, as a straight up, you know, definition. Like,
I'm glad, like, you looked it up because I considered it.
Oh my god!
I'm glad it brought you joy, Sarah. I was
thanks,
I was
Dave.
Unsure,
Dave.
If you like that joke, you should watch the whole season because that comes up.
And
in every episode, I believe.
Yeah, will do.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
So they're recurring jokes through the whole first season.
Well, the opening where the opening pan across all the science jars.
Yes,
That's always in their
poison.
Always, yeah, they're always
look around. You look around. Right. You. That's another one.
Each episode follows that same format. There's always two or three experiments, and then it goes back. And at the end, it's always the next episode that never happens. I think one of them's like cosmetics or something like that.
Yeah,
and yeah, it's pretty good. Okay, so put to a vote.
Yes.
All right, Tara.
Yes.
Joe. John.
Yes.
And Sarah?
Yes, indeedy.
Hey.
All right, 3 for 3. Look Around You, Series 1, Episode 2, Water. You are hereby inducted into the Extra Hot Great Canon.
Americans love a winner.
Yup.
And will not tolerate a loser.
Nope.
It's time for Winner and a Loser of the Week. And Sarah has our winner.
I do, and it's the Emmys. Wait. Don't fast forward. Actually, this ties in kind of to Tara's rant about heroes, and maybe there's hope in that department. The Emmys have revamped some categories. They've split Best Miniseries and Best TV Movie, which they merged, I think, a few years ago because they felt miniseries were on the wane. Mm-hmm. And then miniseries came back. I absolutely agree with Tara's and many other people's contention that a lot of anthology series or just series being like, but we only had 14 episodes and they're trying to sneak in so they don't have to compete with Breaking Bad, which is bullshit. Mm-hmm. But I think this is a step in the right direction. They also split... They did something with reality programming so that there's going to be like more categories and not like everything isn't all lumped in together. So I think competition has won.
I think it's like how we used to have it on the old TWAP boards where it was like candid versus competition reality shows.
Right. Competition or just nonfiction or documentary. So yeah. I think that people have long been afraid that giving even one, like making even one reality Emmy was like, you know, behold the deluge. But I think that makes sense because it's not a genre that's going away, and it's time to acknowledge that Project Runway and Duck Dynasty are different animals that are edited differently and should be awarded differently.
Yeah.
So yay Emmys, tentatively. Mm-hmm. We'll see. Who's our loser?
Our loser is one Brooke Burke Charvet, who was unceremoniously canned from Dancing with the Stars, where she was a, quote, commentator, unquote. I don't think she was ever anyone's favorite part of the show. Obviously, that is Tom Bergeron. But this was very weird. The news just broke at, like, on Friday night in a very sketchy way. And then subsequently, it was announced that she's going to be replaced by Erin Andrews. Shrug. Health enthusiast from the probiotic yogurt commercials that I've seen. But anyway.
Activia.
Isn't Erin Andrews the one who got, she was a sportscaster who someone spied on her in a hotel room or something?
Whoa.
Yeah, anyway, but I thought she was still sportscasting, and she actually did a, like, she got not promoted, but she went to Fox, and now she gets better things to do.
Well, so, I guess she has enough time to do this for 2 hours a week.
Every time I hear Tom Bergeron, I just go through that thing from Frisky Dingo. Tom Bergeron, Agamemnon.
Brother of Menelaus. Yeah.
That brings up an interesting question,
yes.
Which is this. Do you know what time it is?
Ice time?
Nope.
Fame time?
Close. Game time.
Thanks, game time.
All right, everybody, this is the second game time of the season. The standings are Tara, 0, Sarah, 0, valued guest, 1.
Yeah.
So that means, John Ramos, you're in the lead.
Playing with the house's money.
Today's game time comes from Daniel S., who earns himself an extra credit. There we go. Which is redeemable for an extra hot, great topic of his choosing. This week, we are going to play Spin Class, in which you will be tested on your knowledge of TV show spinoffs.
Oh, nice.
TV show spinoffs.
Okay.
I feel good about this one.
I will read you the name of a TV show character. If you can tell me the titles of the original TV show and its spinoff that featured that character, you get 3 points. Okay?
Yes.
Okay.
If you need a clue, I am going to be extremely generous, and I'm going to give you the actor who played that character and the original show. Okay? Ooh. If you get the name of the spin after that, you get only 1 point.
Okay.
So there's value in taking a stab at it from the start.
Okay.
3 points versus 1 point. Any questions?
No.
Okay.
Nope.
We have 54 questions.
Oh, shit.
Which have been randomized for your pleasure. Now let's see.
Gross.
Let's see who goes first. Picky, what do you got for us?
We will start with Sarah.
All right. We're going to go Sarah, then to John, and then to Tara. Are we ready to play Spin Class?
Yes.
Okay. Yes.
Yes.
Sarah.
Mm-hmm.
Your character, Chachi Arcola.
Chachi Arcola. The original show was Happy Days, and it was spun off to Joni Loves Chachi.
That is 3 points, and it is all or nothing. There is no points for guessing one but not the other.
Gotcha.
Okay.
All right, to John, your character, Walter Sherman. Walter Sherman.
Walter Sherman. I'll take the hint.
Okay, the actor is Jeff Stultz from Bones. Name the spinoff from Bones.
Bones had a spinoff.
Not for very long.
I don't know. I knew Joni Loves Chachi, but...
The Finder?
The Finder, the Finder was Finder. The show.
Never heard of it.
Okay, Tara.
It died so Enlisted could live.
Hardly even
know. Oh, over. Awesome. Okay. I'll take that hit.
Yes.
Jake Hansen.
Jake Hansen originated on Beverly Hills 90210. And went on to appear in Melrose Place.
3 points. Sarah.
Yes.
Daria Morgendorfer.
Wow. I am not sure, so I'm going to guess. Hope for 3 points. I think the original show was Beavis and Butthead, and then she was on Daria.
That's nice!
Oh,
3 points. John?
Yes,
George Steve. Jefferson.
George Jefferson was originally on All in the Family and went on to the Jeffersons.
3 points. All right. Tara?
Yes.
Harriet Winslow.
She originated on Perfect Strangers and went on to star in Family Matters.
3 points. Nice. Sarah? Alan Shore. Yep. Alan Shore.
Alan Shore. Alan Shore. Alan Shore. Alan Shore. Fuck. Hint, please.
James Spader from The Practice.
Oh, damn it. If I'd thought about that longer. From The Practice. So that was Boston Legal.
Boston Legal is the spinoff, correct, for 1 point.
I'll dig it.
Okay, Tara.
Nope.
Nope.
Me.
John, sorry. Suzanne Sugarbaker.
Mark will kill me. But I don't know where Designing Women came from. I'll have to take the hint.
Okay. The actress, Delta Burke. The show, the original show, Designing Women. So you hit it the wrong way.
Oh, interesting.
I can't remember what it was called either.
It's funny.
Peplums Are Us.
I thought that show ended because she... I don't know.
The show's called Woman of the House.
Oh, yeah. She was like... Hmm. She was a politician or something.
Oh, interesting.
Huh. Yeah.
All right. Tara?
Yes.
Klaus Mikkelsen. Mikaelson. Klaus Mikkelsen.
Hint.
Joseph Morgan from The Vampire Diaries.
I'm going to guess he's now on The Originals.
Correct for 1 point. Back to Sarah.
Yep.
Lauren Conrad.
Lauren... why can't I remember the first thing?
You can.
Which, no, I don't think I can. One of them is The Hills. And the other one is...
Oh.
You can always ask for the hint.
Sarah, I'm trying to beam it into your head right now.
I know. Maybe I should be proud of not knowing this. You know what? I will take the hint.
All right. Lauren Conrad plays herself in the show Laguna Beach. The spinoff is...
The Hills.
1 point. All right. So we're on to John.
Yes.
Drake Mallard.
Hint, please.
Okay. Jim Cummings from DuckTales. The spinoff. From DuckTales.
Say that again.
Okay. The character, Drake Mallard, the voice of Jim Cummings, from the show DuckTales. The spinoff is...
No idea.
Anybody want to take a guess at this? Stars a duck. Darkwing Duck.
Oh,
Darkwing
right.
Duck.
Oh.
Darkwing
Duck.
All right, Tara?
Yep.
Flavor Flav.
Mm-hmm. Oh, God. He was originally on... Oh, God.
And we want the direct spinoff, I think. Because I think this might be the... start of 10,000 different shows. You're gonna need an answer.
Okay.
Or you can ask for the clue.
Yeah, okay, clue.
Played himself on The Surreal Life.
The Surreal
Oh,
Life!
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Okay.
Oh.
Flavor of Love? No! The one with Brigitte Nielsen!
Strange Love.
Strange Love! Ah.
0 points!
Strange Love!
All right, Sarah, listen up. Gary okay. Ewing.
Gary Ewing?
Gary. Yep. Everybody's favorite Ewing. Gary.
Gary.
Who killed Gary?
Gary?
Who killed Gary?
Hint.
Ted Shackelford from the show Dallas. The spinoff from Dallas.
Problem is that I don't... No, the spinoff, so I'm going to make up a show that is called...
Wait. Let me just say, it's a show that existed.
It's been mentioned on this show recently, I think, if it's the one I'm thinking of.
I don't know. I can't speak to that, but okay. I will just say, I would guess something that is akin to Dallas.
Texas Nights.
Oh. Knott's Landing.
Oh, that is what I was thinking.
Yeah. Right. Okay, John.
Yes.
The character, Jack Tripper.
Jack Tripper. Where did Three's Company come from?
And I just want to say, while John's thinking about this, the author wanted to mention that some of these are backdoor pilots. I'm not saying it pertains to this one, but I'm just taking the moment. So not, you know, some of them are spinoffs. Some of them are, you know.
Right.
That's what she said.
I see. I'm going to take the hint.
All right. Jack Tripper. The original show is Three's Company. What's the spinoff?
See, that's the one I don't know.
It is a remake. That's maybe what you were thinking of, Robin's Nest or something like that.
The British. UK.
Yeah,
the British
yeah
show.
That
yeah,
is
yeah.
what I was thinking of. It's where it came from.
But we need the spinoff.
Yeah, I don't know.
The spinoff's called Three's a Crowd.
Yeah.
Three's a Crowd. Yeah.
Oh, isn't that weird? Good. Like, it's all set at the Regal Beagle or something like that?
It's
oh,
him. God. He gets married, and it's like him, his wife, his and
bistro.
His, and the dad, I think.
And he opens
the
bistro or something. All right.
I'm going to blame my parents.
Taking
I
us into
wasn't
our
allowed to watch it.
First
they
score
were
break.
Right.
Taking us into our first score break.
Yes.
Tracy Kiber, or Kibber, K-I-B-R-E.
Hint.
Baby New Earth.
Uh-huh.
Law and Order.
Okay.
The spinoff is
Law and Order Trial by Jury.
4-1 Wow,
nice. Nice pull.
Oh, shit! John has 3 points. Sarah and I are tied with 8.
Oh, all right. So we're, I don't know, about two-fifths the way through our game?
Okay.
All right. And we're going back to Sarah for this one. Sarah.
Yes.
Lou Grant is your character.
Lou Grant.
The original show and the spinoff.
The original show is Mary Tyler Moore, and the spinoff is, I think, called Lou Grant?
Nice!
Oh! Thank God I'm old.
All right, number 17 for John.
Spread Eagle.
Your character is Mork. Mork.
That's what she said.
What? Oh, no.
I feel like I've missed a key reference. Mork, original show and the spinoff. Mm-hmm. You can ask for a hint. I'll give you the original show. I bet you know the actor who played Mork.
Yes, sadly.
Alas.
I'll take the hint.
All right. Robin Williams played Mork. The original show was Happy Days. What's the spinoff?
It was Happy Days. God.
Oh, God, yeah.
It's Mork and Mindy.
Didn't spin off from that.
Mork and Mindy is correct. Okay, Tara.
Nope. Oh, yes, it is me. Yes. Sorry. Apologies.
Dr. Mark Sloan.
Dr.
Mark Sloan.
I'm going to say he was first on Grey's Anatomy and then probably was on Private Practice.
Incorrect. Poo. Played by
totally
Dick Van Dyke.
Ow!
The original show, what? Jake and the Fat Man.
Not even close.
The spinoff, Diagnosis Murder.
Of course.
Wow.
All right. Sarah. Phyllis mm-hmm. Lindstrom.
Phyllis Lindstrom.
Phyllis.
Hint, please.
Played by Cloris Leachman from the show The Mary Tyler Moore Show. Second Mary Tyler Moore Show entry so far.
Oh, I don't know what she was on. Rhoda?
Phyllis. The show Phyllis. Oh. Spinning off all sorts of first name spin-offs. All right, John. Robert Lewis is your character. Robert Lewis.
Hint, please.
Kevin Whatley played this character in Inspector Morse. What's the spinoff?
Oh, you lived in England. Maybe you do know this.
might have been before my time.
What's the spinoff, John?
No, I'm going to pass.
The show's Lewis.
I was going to guess The Adventures of Lewis and Clark.
Which brings us to our next strategy. Just guess one of the names.
Just guess one of the names.
All right, Tara.
Yep.
Here's a toughie one.
Okay.
Graham Lubbock. Lubbock. L-U-B-B-O-C-K. Graham Lubbock.
Hint.
Bill. Oh, Jesus. Bill Krichnerbauer. Krichnerbauer.
Uh-huh. Okay.
From the TV show Growing Pains.
Oh, just the 10 of us.
Good for 1 point. All right, Sarah.
Yep.
That piece of shit. The show, not Sarah.
Awkward.
Sure.
Sure, I know.
All right, Sarah.
Wait, that was on?
Put your thinking cap on for this one. Your character name is Fraser Crane. The original show.
Rule.
And
the original show was Cheers. The second show was Frasier.
Good for 3 points to John. Maude Findlay. Finlay. Original show and the spinoff.
I believe original was also Mary Tyler Moore and spinoff was Maude.
Incorrect.
Is it Laughing? Or?
The original show is Maude. The spinoff from Maude is All in the Family.
No, the other way around.
Other way around.
Other way around.
Family.
Okay.
Family.
Sorry.
Yeah.
One of the other ones that gave birth to
one of the great TV theme songs, too.
For real. Yep.
Yes, All in the Family spun off Maude.
And then Maude also had a spinoff, I believe.
It was called Maude.
Florida.
Oh.
Is her maid.
Tara. Kimberly Parker.
Kimberly Parker.
Yeah. Kimberly Parker.
Hint.
Countess Vaughn in Moesha.
Um, It was the show she was in with Monique, but I can't remember what it was called.
The Parkers. The
Parkers. Damn it!
All right, Sarah.
Does not yep. observe your rule, Dave.
Norman Bunce. B-U-N-T-Z.
Norman Bunce.
Yep.
I believe the original show is Hill Street Blues, which was spun off to Beverly Hills Bunce.
Holy shit.
Nice.
What?
I did not expect
Bunce.
That one.
Come on.
Amazing.
Oh my God.
Wow.
My dad was the only person who watched Beverly Hills Bunce. He still said it went off the air.
Is that with a Z or an S?
Z.
Z.
Z? Oh my God. Amazing.
John, Colonel Potter. Colonel Potter.
Colonel Potter. I don't know. Hint.
What? Okay, Colonel Potter, played by Harry Morgan in MASH.
Shame him.
Sorry, I'm sorry. MASH.
Yeah, I hated that show, God.
not a wasp, murder. Spinoff?
I don't know.
Often mentioned on the show for some reason because I'm fascinated with it.
I don't
after
think it's
MASH.
The Morgans.
Yeah, after it really MASH. Does come MASH. Up a lot. Yeah.
It does.
All right, Tara.
Yeah.
That's Phil, what she said.
Jesus. Phil Fish.
Phil Fish?
Yep.
The original show is Barney Miller and the spinoff is Fish.
Yep. Fish hey. Played by Abe Vigoda. back to Sarah.
Yep.
The character's name, Angel.
Not oh. on hell.
Thanks. Thanks, Piggy. The original show is Buffy the Vampire Slayer and the spinoff is Angel.
3 points to John. Florence Castleberry. That's a great name. Florence
Castleberry.
Castleberry.
Hint, please.
Played by Polly Holiday, also a fantastic name, from the TV show Alice.
Oh, sure.
So it's Flo. Was it just called Flo? I actually thought I remembered that.
Praise the rule.
I couldn't remember if it was Flo or Flo's Diner. Or something
taking
like that,
us yeah. into our second score break. Sarah Reeves Mirren. Sarah Reeves Mirren.
Can you spell Mirren?
Yes, M-E-R-R-I-N. Mirren? Mirren?
M-E-R-R-E-N.
No, I-N. One E, one I.
Hand.
Jennifer Love Hewitt from Party of Five.
Oh.
She was in Time of Your Life.
Ugh. Hi, Stephanie. All
right. I knew the name. Okay, John has 5. I have 13. And Sarah has 20.
Holy
oh, my
shit.
God. Boom.
All right, here we go. One of Sarah's favorite shows, so I'm sure she's going to get 3 points on this one. Leroy Jethro Gibbs.
Oh, God.
Leroy Jethro Gibbs.
Wow. Well, now I'm worried that like there was a spinoff that I missed in there, and I'm not sure I can solve this puzzle navally. Navally. I think it's NCIS and NCIS LA.
Jag to NCIS.
Fucking Jag.
Oh, fucking Jag.
That's what she said.
Mm-hmm. All right, John. Alana Fuck. Thompson. Alana Thompson.
Alana Thompson. Hint, please.
She played herself in a TV show called Toddlers and Tiaras.
Oh, sure.
Is that Honey Boo Boo?
Here comes Honey Boo Boo.
Here comes
I think you
Honey
should
Boo-Boo.
Give him that one. That's close enough.
No. I'm fine with him taking that point.
All right, Tara.
Yes.
Miles O'Brien
uh-huh.
is your character's name.
I believe he went from Star Trek The Next Generation to Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Correct.
Wow. Nerds.
All right, Sarah.
Yep.
Joey Tribbiani.
the rule. Joey Tribbiani started out on Friends, and then he was on Joey.
Correct. To John, Stephen Colbert.
I don't feel right taking this from Tara, but The Daily Show and The Colbert Report.
I think it's all right for you to know that. That was a good one to know. Yes.
Melvin Frohike.
Frohicky, I think.
Oh, Frohicky, yeah.
From the X-Files yeah, to yeah, the yeah. Lone Gunman?
As soon as you said it, I'm like, oh yeah. Yeah. 3 points. Sarah, Frohicky. Yep. Shame on me. Jeff Colby.
Yep. God damn it. Jeff Colby.
The corollary to the rule, I think. But don't go by me. I'm not 100% positive.
Yeah.
I'm not either. I just can't remember which one it spun off of. So I'm going to cross my fingers and hope that he started on Dynasty and went to the Colbys.
Nice.
Yes.
Beautiful.
All right. Jamie Summers, John. Jamie Summers.
Jamie Summers started on the $6 Million Man and went to the Bionic Woman.
3 points.
Nice.
Oh, Tara, yeah. A lucky pick.
Okay.
You can thank me later. The okay. character's name, Canine.
Oh, from Doctor Who?
But will she get the fit off?
Fuck. Like the adventures of Sarah
Bunting.
I don't know.
Canine and Company.
Oh.
Why would you name a Doctor Who spinoff after me? P.S. I'm quite offended by that.
No, it was because he had a companion named Sarah that I think was Canine's companion, too.
Sarah Jane.
Sarah Jane.
Oh, okay.
All right, so we're back to Sarah.
Yes.
Your character's name is Denise Huxtable.
Oh.
Oh, God. My mind just emptied of shows with Lisa Bonet on them. But she must have started on The Cosby Show and gone to a different world.
Nice!
3 points. And we're on to John, who gets Princess Adora. Princess Adora.
Huh.
I'll take the hint, please.
Okay. Melody, that's the name, Melody Britt, the voice from He-Man and the Masters of the Universe, the spinoff. I will accept a partial title answer for this one. I'm giving you the additional clue. There is a colon involved. I do not need that.
That's what she said.
Wow.
That was actually a better one for As You May Have Read in the Men's Room. I apologize.
All right. Have a clue what that is?
No.
She-Ra, Princess of Power.
Right.
That's the girl He-Man. Girl He-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Tara.
Yeah.
Jack Harkness.
I think he started on Doctor Who and then went to Torchwood.
3 points. 3 points. And I'm just checking my... Yes, it is time for our last score break for the end of the game.
Okay. John has 11. I have 22. Sarah has 29er.
All right. Ooh. I still think it's anybody's game. Well. To Sarah.
Yes.
Diego.
Oh, sure.
Character simply known as Diego.
Diego, my least favorite.
Say, she might not know, and then I was like, oh yeah, she knows.
Yeah, there's a 4-year-old in the house. Last, even he's like,
baby
Diego
born
sucks.
To humanity. Today we mourn Diego from Children of Men. Sorry.
He started on Dora the Explorer, and is it just called Diego? Or no, it's Go Diego Go.
Nice. Wow. Way done.
Also, ew.
Finally, your secret family and child's paying off, Sarah. All right. Mr. Ramos, your character, Cleveland
yes,
Brown. Cleveland Brown.
Cleveland Brown. I wish I knew, but I'll take that.
Family Guy. Oh, the actor is Mike Henry, the voice of Cleveland Brown from Family Guy.
Family Guy.
Use it, John. Use it to inform your decision.
Use what was his name?
Cleveland Brown.
It could be either one.
Spinoff? Any idea?
No.
From Family Guy?
Cleveland Brown.
The Cleveland Show.
The Cleveland
Show. The Cleveland Show.
Really?
All right. Ariano.
Yeah.
John Shepherd.
Hint.
Stargate SG-1, played by Joe Flanagan.
No.
Stargate Atlantis?
1 point. Over to Sarah. Dennis Booker.
Oh, jeez.
another nice pick action.
Oh, picky. 21 Jump Street and Booker.
3 points.
Sidebar, I don't know if I forgot to actually look up whether this is true, but one of the credited producers on the Showtime show Gigolo about gigolos is Richard Grieco. So I don't know if it's the same Richard Grieco, but would it really surprise anybody if he were producing a reality show about gigolos fucking ladies in Las Vegas?
No.
Proceed.
Okay. John. Addison Montgomery. Addison Montgomery.
Oh. I know this.
Do you?
Deep. Well, not enough to pull it out, but...
That was confrontational.
Do you?
Explain yourself, Remus. I have the doomsday weapon.
I'll take the hint.
All right. Played by Kate Walsh, the show Grey's Anatomy. The spinoff is...
Private Practice.
1 point. All right. This is a hard one, Tara.
Okay.
Rhoda Morgenstern.
Oh, Mary Tyler Moore show to Rhoda.
That's good for 3 points. To Sarah, yep. Phil McGraw.
Phil McGraw.
Oh.
Wow. Huh. Okay. He started on Oprah. He went to Dr. Phil.
3 points. To John.
How's that working for you?
Great.
Florida Evans.
Florida Evans. Hint, please.
Played by Esther Rolle. Two L's.
Rolly.
Rolly. Oh, is that Rolle? Okay. From the show Maude.
Already mentioned by me in this episode.
The spinoff. I did not know this. Got a guess?
No.
I
100%
shout out
said
to,
it.
Shout out to Kim Reed. Good times.
Oh, I thought it was just called Florida. Then I didn't say it.
Okay.
I was no help at all.
Tara?
Yeah.
Sophia Petrillo.
She started
Petrillo?
On...
Petrillo?
Petrillo.
Petrillo.
Started on Golden Girls, went to Golden Palace.
Correct. Estelle Getty. Okay, last one for Sarah.
Yep.
Edna Garrett.
Edna Garrett. Oh, God.
I've not been lucky with my draws.
Sometimes Picky favors you, sometimes he doesn't.
Yes.
Sarah,
Picky
you know
favors
this.
The brave. I do know this, but I'm going to take the hint.
Okay. Charlotte Ray.
Sure.
From Different Strokes. The spinoff is.
Oh, the spinoff is. Yeah, the spinoff is Facts of Life.
Yep, 1 point. John, your last one. The character, Xena.
Nice.
Xena. Started on Hercules, the Legendary Journeys, finished on Xena, Warrior Princess.
Nice use of the colon. Pause, wait. Nice use of the colon, John.
As you may have written in the men's room.
3 points. And
yay.
Lastly,
yep.
For Tara,
mm-hmm.
Olivia Benson.
What?
It's Benson.
Wait, what was she? But was she? Okay, well, she's on... as far as I know, she originated on Law & Order SVU.
Apparently not.
Okay, Law & Order to Law & Order SVU? I don't know about
I'm not
that.
Sure that's...
I'm not sure that's accurate, but I'll take it.
Could be one of those backdoor ones we discussed.
That's true, it could.
All right, so...
It wasn't,
especially on SVU. Sorry.
And right. Our final scores are...
John has 15, I have 32, and Sarah finished so strong. 5, 10, 15, 20, 25, 30, 35, 39.
Whoa!
Yeah.
All right. Woo-hoo. So let's celebrate with our shits and giggles question.
Okay.
First to shout it out gets a Dave point.
Okay.
The character, we're looking for both shows, character is Benson Dubois.
Oh, Soap and Benson.
I think Tara got that 1 day point for you. Congratulations, Sarah.
Woo!
Sarah. Sarah.
Oh, well, that is it for another episode of Extra Hot Great. We raised our eyebrows for the premiere of The Amazing Race All-Stars before going around the dial with stops at Downton Abbey Series 4, American Idol, The Heroes Reboot, and Looking. Dave pitched Look Around You Series 1 Episode Water for the canon, which was voted in by the rest of the Extra Hot Great Gang. Thanks, gang.
Thang.
We crowned winners and losers of the week, and Sarah was the winner of this week's Spin Class Game Time from Daniel. Remember,
we're listening.
I am David T. Cole on behalf of Tara Ariano.
I forgot our passports. Just kidding.
Sarah Bunting.
Killer fatigued.
And John Ramos.
Move over, Phil.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you next time right here on Extra Hot Great.
Now let's rejoin the ants and see how they're settling into their igloo. A change has taken place. The igloo appears to have melted. Perhaps the scientist forgot to turn off a Bunsen. Water, water, what hast thou done? Bless you, ants. Blance.
Love.